Hi there, I'm Krish Saroy and welcome to the Sacred Wild Podcast. Each week I show you how to live your purpose and discover your own sacred wild spirit. On the podcast we explore the nexus point where nature, consciousness, leadership and activism come together. I talk with thought leaders to get their insights and wisdom about our collective transformation. I also show you how to own your power, give your gifts and make your highest impact on this world. So with that, let's dive into this next episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sacred Wild Podcast. I'm your host, Krish Saroy, and today I am so pleased. I have a very dear friend of mine on the line, and that is Lilith Joanna Flanagan. Hi, Lilith. How are you?
Hi, Krish. How are everyone? Thank you for inviting me.
So great to have you here. So Lilith is one of my closest friends on the planet. We've grown to be very good friends over the last, I don't know, what is it, like 5 years now, 4 years, something like that. And Lilith is just one of the most magical people I think I've ever met. So I met Lilith doing a coaching course. It was an advanced coaching course. I've been coaching for about 17 years at the time. And just when I thought I didn't really have much to learn or anything like that, I did Lilith's course and boy, was I wrong. So Lilith, I could wax lyrical about you for hours, but why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are in the world?
Oh, thank you so much for this invitation, Krish. I suppose I am a human, a member of this planet, mother, wife as well. And I'm very passionate about, I suppose, ascending us as a planet, as humans. Mm. So I tend to choose my journey to be of service for people on their journey, for people who are willing to facilitate the journey for others and equip them with some skills. Sometimes maybe invite them to reflect on the attitude, on the philosophy, on the spirituality, what they do. And that's what we do in Evolution Coaching Academy and with coaching courses for beginner and advanced level. But also my calling that I'm really following now is the planet and the environment. So one of the areas that I happen to offer as part of our service is environmental coaching and dialoguing with Earth, and that being also in a larger scope of quite deep learning of who we actually are and what for on this planet right now. And what role actually we want to take actively, and what does it mean to take it actively, what can follow as plans. So that's what we we've been having a very good conversation about in Sila.earth, and we have co-created together, Krish, the Living Earth program.
Yeah.
It's been a great joy.
Absolutely. And as Lilith said, we are actually collaborating on something called Sila.earth, but we'll get to that a little bit later on. I mean, obviously you are you're a master certified coach at ICF level. You've been coaching for many years, but you've developed this body of work called environmental coaching. So tell us a little bit more about what that is, and we'll go into kind of the dialoguing piece in a moment.
Of course. So coaching has become really my second nature, I suppose, because I've been coaching, I've been mentor coaching, supervising, teaching coaching, also serving as an assessor for International Coach Federation in the accreditation programs, and also being an active member of the ICF community locally and internationally. So I felt it was my kind of second fabric of almost who I am. And also what I discovered through exploring the sustainability and environment, that I also need some education in my kind of calling, being in service of the planet. So I joined Schumacher College and Holistic Science course and MSc in Holistic Science. And during that course, we had absolutely amazing experience of the presence of Anna Breitenbach, who is an interspecies communicator, and who was teaching us how to communicate with other species using telepathy, which at that point, you know, was still kind of seen as a pseudoscience, and I'm sure it is still seen by many at the moment in the mainstream. But yet, she wasn't talking about it. She was doing it, and she was teaching us the skill in an art, and we were experiencing that. Mm-hmm. And what I discovered is that what she's teaching us is so much embedded in the coaching competencies as defined by the ICF, by the International Coach Federation. And it's so also in line with what I've been teaching coaches in terms of their presence and being in a kind of space of holding space for the client and hearing the client on kind of all kind of different levels. And I thought, God, coaches are so natural to learn to communicate with other species in this planet. And if that's so, well, can we imagine if we human beings just remember how it is like to be in that communication, meaningful communication with the world we are part of, in that process of, you know, facing the climate change and becoming, you know, the cohabitant of this planet rather than the user and abuser of the natural resources. So this is how environmental coaching came to life. It was the combination of those two really very special streams, the coaching competencies and the holistic science and the interspecies communication into kind of one body of knowledge, which is being taught, you know, through the intuitive coach at our academy at the moment as well.
Yeah. And, you know,
yeah.
I love that. And it's so, I mean, obviously we've had this ongoing dialogue, but I think it's become so obvious that, you know, during kind of the pandemic and lockdown and all that kind of thing, nature has become so much more prevalent on people's minds, psyches, spirits, if you like. So it's so, and I think, you know, we seem to be, you know, fingers crossed, in some kind of awakening as a species around that. So, I mean, what as you've applied this and you've been teaching this through your courses, how have you found your students kind of receiving it, and what kind of experiences have they been having?
Well, yeah, I mean, quite interestingly, I took a very light approach to start with, because clearly it was a coaching course and they were coming to get a qualification that was ICF qualification, and enabling them to kind of be credible in any kind of environment where they offer their coaching services. So kind of putting some extra curriculum, which maybe not everyone was that interested to explore, was something that I needed to consider whilst doing that. So I was taking it in a very light way. And I suppose I was connecting with Arnold Mindell process work. So it was more in a kind of way of flirting with the environment. as part of the coaching conversation. And enabling the students, you know, when they were kind of practicing coaching, to start noticing, you know, what's happening, what kind of resonance is happening in the environment, natural environment, when the conversation is happening. Mm. So for them as coaches, but as well to invite the client's awareness of noticing signals that might be kind of, you know, really something grasping their attention whilst they're having a conversation. And those signals, maybe the bird singing, maybe, you know, someone would kind of feel this, a kind of smoke, you know, kind of scent that they were kind of connecting with, although there wasn't any fire, but that was the sensation that was coming to them. And then the coach exploring what could be the meaning of it.
Mm.
And each of these situations, people had just absolutely have had amazing breakthrough.
And
so bypassing the logical process of analytical, you know, what's this, what's that about, and then, you know, kind of reductionist way, dropping into the pieces, the micro units. No, just all of a sudden, there's awareness that they were so much longing for just was coming and appearing for them. So I think people were quite, you know, the students were quite, you know, rewarded with the experience through their experience. And that allowed me to kind of maybe take it to the next level and then take the course into the kind of space of inviting the students to actually the process of active meeting of members of the natural world.
Right.
And engaging in a dialogue.
Okay, so this is dialoguing with the earth, right? So tell us about, because this is a process you've developed, and I've had the privilege of experiencing it several times, and it's so powerful, Jesus. Tell us about it and the thoughts behind it, as it were.
Yeah. So I suppose that's also another combination of systemic approach and the kind of dreaming level and essence, again, from the Mindel and the process work, that is also used in permaculture and people who work with land in this kind of holistic way. And I suppose it is a process in which we as human come with a certain level of reverence to the natural world or to a member of natural world. That can be a tree, can be a land, can be a river, can be sky, can be a flower. And acknowledging the other as this sentient being with their own will, with their own rights, with their own qualities, character, personality. And that's also something that science has already done, and even mainstream science has done a lot of research on, providing evidence that these are the qualities of plants, for example. And that was something I explored in my dissertation for the holistic science when I was researching into meaningful communication in the ecosystem between plants through oscillations and entrainment. So there's the science behind it, but it's also our attitude, how we approach the other. Because we might want to talk to a plant and the plant doesn't want to talk to us.
Right. It's not like you can walk up to any stranger on the street, is it? And they're just going to engage in a meaningful dialogue with you. So why would it be any different here, kind of thing?
Exactly. Exactly. So it is sometimes using this anthropocentric approach, and you know, it's like what it would be like in the human world, as you have just said. You know, why would we expect a stranger on the street to even give us an eye contact? Not mentioning, oh, hey, I've got some questions. Please let me know all the answers. And by the way, could you do something for me? It's very useful to notice that when we are approaching another member of the natural world, and perhaps we need to spend some time with that member to create that rapport to start with. And that means like, you know, sitting, just being, and without any expectations, just allowing this relationship to form before we ask any questions. But sometimes it's also, you know, we start becoming kind of more, you know, kind of embodying that approach. We might notice that there might be the members of the natural who actually want to communicate with us. And then we might want to respond and just be present and notice that signal, and then allowing that communication, engaging in that communication.
Yeah. So just in terms of like the experience of a dialogue, you know, for me, what I'm hearing here is, you know, there's a very animistic kind of approach, you know, that thing. And, you know, that's where my spirituality comes from. All things have a spirit and all things are sentient and all that kind of thing. But, you know, and there are, having experienced it, you know, there are definitely elements of process work, of shamanic journey, if you like, that kind of thing. But if someone was coming to do a dialogue with you, what kind of process would they experience?
So the process sometimes is not just a moment of a process. But the elements, you know, in a kind of nutshell, it would be about finding own presence. So, this kind of holistic through self is we are becoming an instrument of that process happening. But to become an instrument, we ourselves need to find a way to drop into to being present, dropping to our bodies, noticing our breath, our sensations, noticing, yes, the body and the energetic field of, you know, of being, I suppose. And when we kind of allow ourselves to and you know, become present of our own presence, if you like, then we might give attention to heart, which is one of the strongest electromagnetic field generator, 5,000, you know, stronger than our brain, apparently, according to the research. And we might give attention then to our heart area. And then if we happen to, there is a particular member of the natural world that we already knew we want to communicate. We might, like a dog, for example, you know, I talk with my dog quite a lot, Indy, and I might send her a greeting from the heart. So I might send a greeting to what I imagine is her heart. And then, and I might just notice what's happening. Maybe nothing.
Right.
Maybe something. And just allow myself to embrace and perceive that signal through the whole of me. So it can be a feeling, it can be a thought that is appearing from nowhere. But it could be also a kind of body sensation. There can be kind of movement. It can be that my eyes are landing on a particular object, and then all of a sudden that object has a meaning. It could be, you know, that I experience another sensory signal that it's coming in the moment. And it, you know, and then there is a process of kind of interpreting what it might be. But the thing that when we stay in this communication and we kind of practice that, you know, that ability for that channel of communicating to open up, it just opens. You know, it's becoming more fluent. So it's imagine that you have a tap that, you know, is stuck and, you know, you open it and there's hardly any water trickling. So maybe at the beginning is that, you know, hardly any water trickling.
Yeah, yeah.
But as we, you know, flush it through and just allow it to flow on a regular basis, then the communication, the ability to perceive and be in this contact, you know, from the kind of heart and reverence level, then opens up that possibility to learn. And it is not just about the skill for the fun of having a skill.
That's
another level of reverence, what I'm kind of, I suppose, what I'm caring about. That, you know, it is a purposeful communication. It is a purposeful, you know, maybe we want to become friends, and that's really coming from our heart, rather than using a plant for being a source of information. But also in a bigger purpose, why we are doing it is again for this collaborative cohabitation. And that meaning that, you know, we as humans have lots of ideas, ambitions, ability to make research, ability to create ways forward.
Yeah.
But we tend to live in our human world. But if we kind of, you know, on a global scale, develop a habit and skills of remembering how it is to be in communication with other members of their planet, who are also stakeholders in our plans and ambitions, and we consult with them on the way.
Right.
It not only gives us a possibility that we are going to be collaborative in terms of not harming, maybe, you know, and kind of taking into consideration ways how we can do so they are less harmful or non-harmful, but, you know, nature can also give us ideas for innovation.
Right.
So it may be only surviving by thriving. Yes.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, it's, you know, what I know from this work is you know, I mean, we've had other guests on the podcast who've said, you know, about how we live in, you know, we live in concrete boxes, we go to work in concrete boxes, you know, we spend all of, you know, I think Michael Mortali said that we spent, you know, in America, people spend up to 90% of their week indoors, kind of thing. So, you know, the dialoguing, you know, on the you know, the most basic level just kind of connects us back in with our natural, you know, the natural world, the ecosystem and that kind of thing. But then taking it much, much deeper, this notion of actually the earth has a say in our plans around sustainability or what we're up to, you know, that's it's a much, much deeper and richer level, isn't it? Mm. Which I really love. And given that, I mean, obviously, I know that you've taken this work into the, you know, some of the corporate world, and, you know, you've had some experiences with kind of larger organizations, as it were. And there are a lot of organizations right now, aren't there, that are, you know, committing to sustainability targets or net zero carbon and that kind of thing. And you kind of assume that they would not be open to, you know, work that is not quite so analytical or, you know, left brain, as it were. But what have you noticed about the reception of the work in that kind of environment?
Well, yeah, it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because there's lots of perception in the environment of people who find it easy to connect with the natural world, that the corporate world might be completely not perceptive to these ideas and calling them hippie or, you know, using names for it, yeah?
Yeah, woo-woo.
We know that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very easy leap to make, isn't it? But
absolutely. But also, I suppose I find it slightly easier because I was a corporate animal before I started my coaching journey for years, and I was a business leader and kind of responsible for organization structures of like hundreds of people for P&L. And then when I decided to change the direction and kind of enter more holistic way of being, and then started learning coaching, most of my clients were corporate and organizations. So I work with them as a coach for many years with individuals and teams, etc. So in a sense, you know, for me, the corporate world are just human beings, you know,
Right. Everywhere.
They're everywhere, just humans. They are people who have hearts, who have feelings, who often have amazing training in the area of collaborating. Mm. And that's why the corporates are so successful. They know how to collaborate, which what I'm finding in the world of, you know, of people who are very connected with the natural world, sometimes their ability to collaborate is not as good, if you like. And maybe, you know, some of them have gifts, but many of them lack the training, which would be so useful.
Yes.
You know, for them to then be able to, you know, really take their ideas forward, bring others and collaborate with others. And they would be really, you know, I imagine our world would just move so faster in this climate change topic we are having if we could, you know, cross-pollinate.
Aspect,
you know, the really hard skills for self-organizing and putting things in action, making things happen, being cross-pollinating to the natural people, and that kind of embodied living earth in the corporate environment where people, you know, often are so busy with thinking all the time, so many tasks, so many projects. And even when they want to connect with being, often there isn't time, a space to breathe, space to just notice who I am, notice my body, what am I feeling? So how could we expect people to go and, you know, embrace the idea, oh, now I'm going to connect with the natural world, I'm going to talk with the plants, you know, in my 5 minutes break, for example. So what I'm finding, the idea when we facilitated an experience like that in the corporate world, people were actually able to kind of connect with the natural world, with the members of the natural world. But I suppose there were the people who were maybe already more on the journey of their holistic well-being. And I suppose that there is also work to be done to support, you know, the corporates and the organization in the very aspect of just, you know, connecting with their body, you know, with the presence, with the energy. And then from that, you know, good place, then embracing the other. But I don't think there's a lack of willingness, and particularly wise, as you mentioned about the net zero greenhouse gas emission targets, and then being, you know, as an ambition for so many companies to be achieved by 2030, somehow is kind of giving a focus to those kind of possibilities, how we move from here with the emissions we have, and actually we don't even know how to measure them, to there where actually the emissions are reduced, and how do we keep our profits intact?
Right.
Yes. And that's a problem, because currently, you know, companies invest a lot of money into, you know, the technologies to be able to measure the carbon emission or greenhouse gas emission. And then, okay, so we measure it, but then, okay, how do we offset it? It takes time to embrace new ways of being on the organization level for people developing new habits. Those habits first are coming from developing new policies and procedures. There's this time, this investment, there are consultants involved, you know, to kind of bring it together. And so the companies look at, okay, how can we speed it up? Or we can offset the emissions.
Right.
But that comes directly from the bottom line, you know, it comes directly from the profit line. It is really expensive. And it's great on the one side, because, you know, companies and organizations, they do good things for the earth, are having the funding. So obviously this is not a lost money. But when it comes to the, you know, the unity, the entity of the organization, well, let's not joke, you know, kid ourselves, this is very expensive to offset carbon emissions. Yeah.
Absolutely. And let's face it, there's only so much, you know, if every big organization on the planet takes the offsetting route, there's only so much offsetting that can be done. There are only so many, you know, there's only so many pieces of land that forests can be planted on or whatever else, you know. We can't just assume that we're going to do the same old stuff and then just, you know, plant a bunch more trees, for example. We've got to do some different stuff. So, just in terms of like, you and I have both worked in organizations, corporations for many years. And I think even just getting people to be at that point where they can just stop and be present would be pretty transformative in its own right, kind of thing. But are you finding that in organizations these days, as you're kind of doing this kind of work and whatever, I mean, you said like some of the people that you've had this experience with are probably like some of those who are like more on the journey and at that end anyway. Are you finding that in organizations there are a growing number of people that are open to this kind of work, as it were?
Well, I do. And you know how I do find it is actually through these conversations. You know, as coaches, we have one-to-one conversations. Obviously, there is so much more disclosed, which we can't disclose.
Of course.
But in terms of, I can relate to it as a kind of aggregated trend of noticing. And also, you know, through the courses, open courses, and people choose to come, and they come from all kind of environment, you know, so they could be the members of the corporate environment, they can be entrepreneurs, or, you know. So what I'm finding is, again, humans are humans, people are people. And apart from that corporate life, there's another life, and there's another interest and passion. And when we providing a corporate environment service, and we invite people to be the whole of themselves, and we create the environment as facilitators, that people may risk to bring out the other aspect of their passion and they, you know, they being into the conversations, then it's quite surprising how much there is already. and it just, it was the assume not to mention it because it might not be seen right, you know, by the others. So, and then I think we can see it on the global trends, on the grassroots, you know, where are these people? They are not just people who are, you know, they work, they have work. And then, you know, how much of the population corporates employ. So, you know, these statistics say, well, these people are not just, you know, activists. These people are, you know, people who have work, and probably many of them have work in the corporate environment. So if we just reach out and create that space when these people can reveal themselves to each other, then they start creating those hubs of these energies and this grassroots within the company of this kind of, you know, bringing life to the corporate life, corporate way of being, and, you know, kind of merging the ideas of analytical targets to be achieved in terms of the net zero targets, measurements, and the profit with aliveness, and inviting the natural world into the conversation, into those plans, into the dialoguing, and hearing the ideas and learning to, you know, learning to consider these ideas into those plans, and those plans, they can become quite innovative, and not just, you know, starving to meet the target and hit the bottom line with offsetting, but thriving in a sense. There can be innovation, there can be evolution, maybe sometimes leading to, you know, evolution or even a change of the purpose of the company existence. But hey, we look at companies like McDonald's, and when they really follow what's the market trend, they find ways. I'm not saying this is the best example from the sustainability point of view, but just in terms of the skills of being able to listen to your audience, listen to the world, to the trends, and these are the trends now, and you know, find those way forward in which they can, the company still make, can make their profits, but make the profits in a more sustainable way. And that refers to the emission target, but also in a way that, you know, their purpose is more connected and integrated with the planet.
Yes. And I think you really do speak to that. I really, really love that you brought up that example, because, you know, we do have this thing, don't we, where we've got lots of organizations and corporations that have been around for a very long time. If you think of the big ones, they tend to have been around for a long time. Although saying that, I mean, obviously tech companies like Google and Amazon, and they've all been around for less than 20 years kind of thing. But, you know, you've got these organizations that are headed up by people who are in, you know, Gen X or the baby boomers. But, you know, of course, we've got, you know, Gen Z and Gen Alpha, the Greta Thunbergs of this world and that kind of thing, who have a set of values that are very much like their legacy is they're having to live with what our generations created. So there will come a time when these people are in the buying power of what these organizations have, and you know, so there's some adaptation there. So as you say, I think it's a really massive point about organizations when they have the impetus to, they can find different ways of connecting with the values of their customers, and sooner or later that will mean becoming sustainable and all of that kind of stuff. I think that's fascinating. Just kind of a kind of slight shift, but you know, but a follow on. Obviously, another audience that I know you've worked with who work in this are kind of like sustainability consultants, because obviously there is now a whole industry for helping these very large organizations to comply with these external regulations and whatever. And it's that's sort of become the world of environmentalism, sustainability, and business, hasn't it? It's almost like a regulatory thing. But and I know you've worked with a number of sustainability consultants themselves who maybe have had a quite analytical approach. I'm just kind of curious what kind of receptivity have you found amongst people who, you know, they obviously, you know, to work in that field, you obviously have to really care. But again, you know, the default is a very head-based approach. So what kind of reception have you found in that kind of audience?
Really great question, because what I'm finding is that these consultants now they want to learn coaching skills because they say that that purely analytical and consultative approach will keep them in the job in 20 years' time doing the same thing. Because people do connect with data, they connect with, you know, the structures, the policies, the things that can be created. But the connection on the heart level, on this alive level, is not really evolving much. This is becoming like another project the company has to do. Like, you know, the equality policy, very important. But if you take that policy from the kind of, you know, someone got a job to implement it in the company, another job I have to do. And you just follow this attitude, another job, another task list I have to do. That's a different spirit than you have someone who really believes in those kind of values and ways forward and brings that spirit of that passion into the project they are leading to implement. So what the consultants do find that, you know, they work with companies because they're companies, they need to comply with those targets. But the connection on, you know, kind of the more soul, if you like, involvement, heart involvement, is something that they find it could be easier for them to create if they learn some coaching skills. And that refers to one-to-one coaching skills, but also that refers to systemic facilitation of teams and organizations that allows a, you know, the collective consciousness to be coming together and allow that to be then present in the room of the people who are present, so that those people don't feel like islands who just open up something about themselves, but they're quite scared how they take it forward to the system, because the system might find it really strange and they closed up. When we do both the individual and the systemic work, when, you know, the teams and, you know, kind of organization members are together in the same space and they start hearing each other in their kind of, again, safe, facilitated way, they start acknowledging, like I was talking about the grassroots, that people often are not too far from each other. And there is a process of awareness start building that, you know, this project is no longer just a tick box or a list of tasks to do. It becomes more alive. There is a connection with them, who they are as a human, who members as a planet, who members as a society, with the kind of level of responsibility. And then we all have it in us. We all have it in us. It's usually dormant because we just don't have time and energy to connect with it. So we bypass it. But when we have these facilitating spaces, people start kind of, you know, like opening those layers, layer by layer, and just remember that they do care. And when they speak that voice of a little bit of a care and hear, you know, how the others respond, well, they often, the others are being inspired that someone has expressed, you know, their care, and they express their care, and then someone else is expressing their care. So it becomes like a space where the care is becoming expressed on the kind of systemic level, where people feel okay. Hey, we all care, actually. And what we mean by that is this, and what we can do about it is this. And then they can collaborate because they have some common awareness, common understanding. They don't have to anymore convince each other. Well, there's a process, of course, but there is some kind of common level where they align from which they can grow individually and as the system.
Yeah. I mean, what I really hear there is, you know, I mean, it takes me to kind of Brené Brown, you know, the kind of the courage to be vulnerable kind of stuff. Because as you say, you're pulling back layers there, and it's like as we pull back the layers of these roles and masks that we wear in corporate and come back to our, you know, being human, we find that we actually do have a lot more common ground, both with each other and with the environment, and that hooks in a different layer, as you say, the heart level, the soul level, whatever you want to call it. But it's just like coming back to our true nature, as it were. Which is healthy for us and healthy for the planet. Funny that, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, so obviously, you know, there are, we've talked about environmental coaching, we've talked about dialoguing, as it were. If people aren't coaches, but they want to learn about dialoguing and how to facilitate and all that kind of thing, is that something they can do with you?
Yes, with pleasure. Absolutely. Yes. Please contact me on sila.earth or evolutioncoachingacademy.org. And I will be delighted to invite you to one of our courses, or if you would like to explore it one-to-one, kind of in a mental coaching space, that would be something I would be absolutely delighted.
Awesome. And of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't just kind of mention right at the end the work we've been doing together. So as you mentioned, Sila.earth, and we mentioned earlier the Living Earth program. So, you know, obviously on this podcast, I'm the host, so I'm going to give you the space to talk about this. But what is Sila.earth and what does it mean to you?
Yes, so I think a lot of things have been said about the meaning and about the purpose and the way and philosophy of collaborating with our planet. And that is, in a sense, encapsulated in Sila.earth. So as an evolution coaching academy, the major focus is coaching and supporting people in developing their coaching skills. But, you know, people want to be coaches, and that's what we serve them to become. So Sila.earth is bringing a context that goes beyond coaching. You don't need to be a coach. It is for people who are feeling a calling that they want to do something for the planet. Whether they have already a role, you know, they might be the leaders of the net zero targeting their organizations, or, you know, the other really important or less important from their point of view, sustainability project and activities, or people who would like to. They might be, you know, they might be influencers. They are able to really make a difference. But they say, well, what do I do? What do I do? I'm just lacking an idea. And for me, it's not enough to you know, kind of take a place in demonstration. I can do it, but I can feel I can do more with what I already have kind of established, what I have available. And I'm looking for, you know, my path. So we welcome all these people, and we invite them to the Living Earth program, including, you know, obviously the environmental consultants, as is Yud Koresh. And first of all, just to kind of do a little bit of a checking where I am as a human into that holistic way of being. So like that process of grounding, that process of acknowledging, and you know, we use different methods. So we use, as the facilitators, we'll be using coaching skills, but there would be also a Akasha reading. So we go beyond the kind of, you know, earthy existence. We will be supporting the person with the understanding of the kind of eternal space.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And the purpose and alignments is in the process. So it is first, the focus is who are you being and who are you being now? What's that space? What's this kind of place of incarnation for you now and here? And then, you know, what is the path forward for you from here? And then we will, you know, do it through, you know, also a very immersed contact with the natural world. So where we go and facilitate, or almost like maybe for some it will be a rite of passage, but it will be a vision quest, and that will be staying with the natural world and having that kind of process of immersion and informing. And then from there, we will invite people into also a process of developing the ability of communicating with the natural world. Maybe they already have it, But maybe there will be a little bit of a support to put it in the context, how that can be actually applied on their path and what they do currently. And there will be also a process of creating a kind of map for them to, you know, being also aware what kind of set of skills they already have as their resources and the gifts and the abilities to take their ideas and plans forward. But at the same time, noticing where might be worth to invest a little bit of a, you know, maybe a bit of a training here, maybe a little bit of a deep exploration here and there, so that actually when they move forward with their plans and ambitions, they might be developing as part of the process as we are there. And then they feel kind of equipped and ready to step out the Living Earth program and actually do something practical, really coming from who they are naturally and in service of our planet.
Love that. Love that.
Well, kind of, you know, planned and designed way.
Love that. And obviously, I mean, it's a program I think we're both very, very, very in love with and very, very happy with, as it were. So obviously, you know, just drawing things to a kind of close now, as it were. I mean, obviously, I can see you're in a beautiful environment, a natural environment, as it were, and all that kind of thing. What's coming up for you next in your work, in your world? What is the world of Lilith looking like now?
So me as a person, what's coming out is the world of voice and the song coming from the planet. So channeling that voice and song, because song is a kind of coherence, kind of coherent form of meaningful communication. So it's a kind of, yeah, it's a little bit of a kind of scientific term as well. But I'm personally planning to spend more time in Italy, which for me is the land of song.
Yes, love that.
And I'm going to be immersed with the land there, and I will be listening to that song and allowing to come through and hopefully sharing that song with others.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Lilith, this is, I've been wanting to get you on here for a while, and this has been everything I hoped it would be, and a whole lot more. Thank you so much for sharing all of your thoughts and your wisdom, but more just your who you are as a person with us and who you are as a being. So thank you so much for being a guest today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Chris. It's been a joy and a pleasure. And thank you for your presence and your interactions and bringing it out. Because for me, this is also a process. So when you ask a question that allows me to connect with, you know, all of myself and the universe, and you've been absolutely wonderful in this way and inspiring. So thank you so much. And thank you for the audience for listening to us.
You're so welcome. Thank you so much. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That was the episode on environmental coaching with Lilith Joanna Flanagan. I'm your host, Chris Saroy, and thank you for joining us on the Sacred Wild podcast. Look forward to seeing you next time. Bye for now. Thank you so much for joining me on the Sacred Wild podcast. I really hope you enjoyed this episode and got something meaningful out of it. And if you did, please consider leaving a review on iTunes. Those reviews really help us out and they're what keep us here. Also, please make sure to hit subscribe and share this podcast with your friends and loved ones. And with that, many blessings, and I look forward to seeing you next time on the Sacred Wild podcast. Bye for now.